to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, son Luke.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. We just got interviewed by a reporter for Hot Pod, the podcast industry newsletter.
I felt very disappointed that we weren't interviewed by Hot Podcaster, which is what I thought it was, and it's why I included so many pictures.
Yeah. Why all those boudoir photos wound up getting attached to the email.
Yeah, very disappointing.
She was asking like about our dynamic together, and I was like, I think that the thing that really drew me to like joking around with Adam was that I could like make a joke about a weird PBS show that almost nobody else I know would have seen, but I'll just drop a sidelong reference to that into a conversation with you, and you will pick it up and run with it in a way that is like incredibly impressive and satisfying. And I think that that's kind of what's ruined us, you know? Like that is why the two of us.
That's what's ruined this show.
That's why the two of us had our minds poisoned and we went out into the world and started trying to make other people laugh with our dumb bits.
And, we had something to give to the world.
We did. I think the friends of DeSoto are a rare breed that actually get what this is. But unfortunately, you and I don't always have great judgment about who will like a joke of ours and when. And there's been a lot less interaction with civilians for both of us over the last 12 months. But it hasn't been an entirely bit-free pandemic for me. I've tried a bit or two, and I thought maybe we could spend some time this Marin talking about bad bit moments.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
You're always doing
bits. No matter what.
You're always doing
bits.
I was doing bits.
Bad bit moment.
Well, this is a bit of a cheat because it's a bit that didn't work with my wife, which is, you know, should just go without saying. She's a contract attorney and was working on a contract with a client. Her boss's name is Ruben, and Ruben was getting mad at one of the parties to this contract because it seemed like they were dragging their feet, making it take longer than it needed to. They wanted more assurances than seemed reasonable to ask for on certain things. And my wife was like dealing with this and escalated it to her boss to let him know what was going on. And I said, those guys better get their hands on some Russian dressing because they're about to get a mouthful of Reuben.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
I wait for the laughter that I feel guaranteed to receive. And
that you deserved.
That I deserved. And she said, who do you think that impresses, Ben?
That's what she said?
Yeah.
I would rather she say nothing than that. That's hurtful.
It was very hurtful. And I was like, tell Ruben I said that. I think Ruben will like it.
Especially like that word, the impresses word. That's the most hurtful part. It's not that it wasn't funny.
Yeah.
To her. It was that it didn't impress. Oh, no.
Yeah. It really smarts when your wife just flips it back in your face like that.
You're such a reliably generous laugher, too. I know this as one of the hosts of this show. Like, so generous you are.
I'm the Pete Holmes of laughing on this show.
Even though most of what I say does not merit that kind of response, it always feels good. And it just doesn't seem right that you can't get that same treatment from either me or your wife.
I tried to make the case for her. I was like, that was fun. Like, I'm just like making our home environment a fun place where a nice bit of wordplay can transpire. And she didn't care for it. Didn't care for it at all.
No, that does not agree with her one bit.
No.
Wow.
Have you had any bad bit moments lately?
I feel like this is that segment on the old Conan show where where they whip over to Max Weinberg and he's like, I too have a bit, Conan. Before playing the pre-tape. I have, and yeah, I did that thing that I've been doing all year, which is you order the food from the restaurant and then you go and pick up that food.
Oh, you ordered it this time? You didn't just steal it from somebody else?
No, I didn't. This time I paid for it. So me and my wife get in the car. We go to pick it up. And most of the time it's like,
wow, your wife goes with you to pick up the food?
Oh yeah.
That's amazing to me.
Sometimes we like to leave the house.
Yeah.
And that's a good excuse. So we go across town. This is not a short trip. Maybe that's why she wanted to go. So go to pick up the thing. And on this particular meal occasion, we were ordering from a place we like a lot. So we ordered a lot of food with the intention of leftovers.
Yeah.
So I show up at this place and it's like empty. It's just me and this one other dude behind the counter. And I give him my name. And he's super nice. Like, nothing about this interaction is weird whatsoever, outside of the weirdness that I inject to it. When he hands me a literal banker's box full of food, like lid and everything.
Wow.
And I look at this thing, and he looks at this thing, and he's like, all right, there you go. And I was like, you can't fire me. I quit.
All I do is
bits, bits, bits.
No matter what.
And it killed. Like, big laugh out of him, big laugh out of me, walk out of the place.
That rules, man.
I had a moment much like you, Ben. I get into the car and I tell my wife what happened, what kind of interaction I just had. It's like, delighted at myself for what had happened.
Yeah,
sticking the landing.
When a joke works and you have a new context to roll it out, what could be more tempting than that?
She doesn't like it when I laugh at my own jokes. And I was very satisfied with myself in that moment in a way that was repulsive to her. So I did not get the points from her for this that I did for my no to be the joke judges watching this scene. So... It was great. It was like the contextual joke that people agree to without planning it beforehand. Like that's what made it so satisfying, was like, we're both looking at the same thing, seeing it the same way. Mm-hmm. And then that was it. Big fun.
Man, does it temper your enjoyment of the joke that its second outing was so catastrophic relative to its first?
The first shot was so satisfying that nothing could take the glow off of it.
Wow. So you're just driving home with... shit-eating grin on your face.
Yeah. It really... look, we have a long-standing rule, you and I. Greatest gen rule. No bits on tips.
Right.
No bits on tips. However, if you are positive, like a sniper in a bell tower in a World War II film, if you have the perfect shot that can end the war...
Yeah, take it.
You got to be sure.
Well, and I think that you're also, like, you're past the point of tips in that scenario. Like, you paid
exactly
online.
That's exactly right. There's no obligation of the tippee to laugh in such a way that they would be deserving of a greater... Like, there's no monetary influence happening in the interaction. I think that's crucial.
In some ways, that's, like, the most pure time to joke around with that.
Absolutely.
With a person that is in that kind of position for their job is, like, all of the pressure has been taken off and you're just relating to them as a human being.
Right.
And it fucking rules that you guys both got a kick out of that.
Yeah.
I sure did. I loved it.
Yeah.
Hey, do you mind if I use some of your material next time I go pick up some food?
Yeah, you got to make sure it's the banker's box, man.
Yeah,
that makes all the difference, but absolutely.
Speaking of things that are awesome, Adam, do you want to get into today's episode of Star Trek Voyager?
I mean, I almost feel like I'm in a refractory period of just relaying a great bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all downhill from here, right? As we discuss Star Trek Voyager Season 1, Episode 11, Heroes and Demons.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
So the Voyager has stopped their attempt to race home to take some samples. There's a nearby protostar, and Janeway is working with B'Elanna Torres on getting some samples of photonic matter from this star. I feel like less linked to the prospect of coffee than normal, but it definitely like feels like pregnant with the possibility of coffee.
There is coffee in that star stuff.
We are going to beam that photonic matter over here, not because it is easy, but because it is hard.
Just another scene of flagrant disregard for what a sterile environment engineering should be. Just go ahead and beam it on over right next to the warp core, right next to BLT's face.
Yeah, the stuff that you beamed from a star, the hottest thing there is.
Oh, and while we're at it, like, let's make sure we don't have our hands around the annular confinement beam settings that well. Like, let's continue to fuck around with those settings when we're dealing with star stuff.
It's very funny how, like, wackadoo and slapdash Starfleet officers kind of seem like they are sometimes. Like, hey, we didn't actually like test this before we did it. We just did it, and then if we fuck it up, we'll like figure out how to fix it later.
Seska could have done this.
Yeah,
why not keep Seska around if this is how you're gonna beam star stuff around?
She would have beamed it right into the warp core and had some retroactive, like, surprisingly plausible sounding justification for it.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I love how Captain Janeway is like, looks like you got your hands full with this two. Oh, I guess it's one. Okay, it's two again. Samples of this star stuff. Why don't you get some help for the work?
Yeah.
Why don't I call Ensign Kim, like, on an off day?
Yeah.
And get him to come into work. And I was, the 16-year-old me was cringing so hard in this moment, because every retail job I've ever had involved phone calls from managers on my day off just to see what I was up to, see if I feel like coming in and covering a sick call.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's something that's either I would be interested in doing or that I wouldn't be obligated to do because they called in a very uncomfortable way.
Yeah. It's really the nightmare scenario outgrowth of...
It's a classic retail worker's lament.
Of the conversation that she had with BLT last episode, where BLT like refused to give a pessimistic estimate of how much time it would take to do something. She was like, my estimates are 100% accurate 100% of the time. I am not under-promising so I can later over-deliver. I am giving you my real estimate. And so... So Janeway's response to this is, well, we'll get other people that are supposed to be taking a break out of their recreation time to come help you speed this process up. But when they radio to Kim, he is not aboard the Starship Voyager.
That's odd.
Classic Star Trek moment when the computer says,
Ensign Kim is not aboard the ship.
Yeah.
Always skin crawly.
And you always want the follow-up question to be, computer, when did they leave the ship?
Right.
And, I mean, like, they answer that question pretty quickly in that, like, you know, scene on the bridge where Tuvok and Chakotay are like, yeah, no, like, we looked into it, and there's no record of him leaving by conventional means, so it must have been unconventional. But, like, I want the computer to know the answer to that question.
Wouldn't it make being in space feel so much safer, like a not insignificant amount of safer feeling, to just know that the computer always had its eye on you?
Yeah.
And would always... sound a little bit of an alarm if either your heart stopped while you were sleeping or if you were no longer aboard the ship.
Right. Like, if you're climbing a mountain, you have a rope that is attached to a piton that's hammered into the rock so that if you fall, you don't fall that far. And I think that that a computer with the capabilities of the one on a starship should be kind of keeping track of everybody aboard and letting, you know, raising the alarm if anything becomes emergent in any way.
This episode continues a series of very interesting compositions I think we're getting on Star Trek Voyager Season 1. There's a two-shot here that's bisected by Tuvok's arm touching his station panel. I just feel like they're really playing around with the space on the bridge especially.
Yeah.
During these conversations, and it's something that I really appreciate.
It's a really cool bridge design, and I like how it feels like it was designed in the tradition of the D, but with like more pragmatism involved. It is not the flagship. It is a working starship in a way that the D sometimes feels like it's like set up to be like really presentable, you know?
I don't want to be too Larry David about this, but like when I look at the reverse shot and I see how small the view screen is, I want to say like, here's an idea. Why don't you make the view screen wider? You have these walls on the other side, on either side of the view screen doing nothing. Why don't you stretch the screen?
My wife called me from a shuttlecraft that was about to crash on a planet, but I did not take the call because I had the view screen guy there. I've been having static when I try to watch basketball, and I find that unacceptable.
You can use my replicator credits for beverages, but never for solid foods. Everybody knows that.
So they come to the understanding that something weird is going on the holodeck. The last place anybody saw Harry Kim was going in to do his Beowulf program, and that was 4 hours ago. And when they scan the holodeck, they like can't even penetrate. Like there's no definitive readings coming back. Which like it would have been great if they'd just been like, well, where was the last place he was on the ship computer? And be like, he like was in the hall right outside the holodeck. And then, huh?
What do you think is the average time of a holodeck program for anyone? Like, man, 4 hours in a Beowulf program without blasting seems like a long time.
Well, maybe he was like going for Twitch partner and he just needed to like really rack up some hours, you know?
I wonder if there's pressure. Like, you only get your 4 hours. You don't want to blast too early.
Right.
Really ride your Beowulf out all the way to the end.
Yeah, he's like the Sting of holodeck programs.
He's doing tantric Beowulf, isn't he?
He sure is.
He may be on the holodeck, but there's a lot of interference, and that's why Chakotay and Tuvok go to the door, give it a heavy knock, and when no one answers, they decide to go on in, and they find themselves in this lush forest at night when we cut to theme.
I wondered if they built this or if it was a real outdoor set that they shot in, because it's like they're that like opening shot with the crane shot down like through the branches of the trees. Like if this is on a soundstage, it's like a really impressive build because that tree is fucking huge. And
it really is.
And if they shot outside, kind of like an unusual thing for Star Trek to do, like an exterior night shoot is a fun place to go.
Speaking of huge, the giant spear that Freya throws at Tuvok and Chakotay interrupts a book report that Chakotay gives to Tuvok here. There's no fucking way he knows this much about Beowulf. Give me a break.
He's got the Cliff's Notes to Beowulf memorized.
Beowulf? It's about a hero named Beowulf, if I remember correctly.
When Freya enters the frame, I thought she had giant fucking honkers because her like armor, and then there's like the like little animal hair balls hanging around her neck, and the way she was lit, I was like, good Lord, Star Trek, like you really like shoving them in my face. But no, it's just just costuming.
It was costuming, I think, lighting. Like angle of the way the light hit her, it really made her look Dolly Parton-esque for a minute. But then
she looked like the heavy metal box art.
She is a shield maiden representing the castle kinged by Hrothgar, and she wants to know like what these two warriors are doing in her woods that she defends. You know, like they have to kind of yes and this. Like
she looks at Chakotay and she's like, what the hell happened to your face? And those ears on you. Oh,
your face is telling me you are not men of the Danes.
You know, the computer won't delete her, so they realize that like this is a safeties off holodeck emergency kind of episode, and so they start to, you know, kind of play along. I feel like they begin playing along with her like less than 5 minutes into the episode in a way that earlier Star Trek would have spent 15 minutes setting up. Okay, we have to like do the things that the characters in the game expect us to do in order to advance the plot. And then when we win, then we can get out of the scrape.
Did I win?
Hardly.
Yeah, tonally, it begins very weird.
She mentions the raven-haired hero that came to kill the monster that's terrorizing her people, and they're like, that's got to be Harry Kim. The twinkle in the eye is a dead giveaway. We know that Harry Kim has that twink.
Freya's like, this man, this Beowulf, he clearly is of a specific sexual prowess. His seduction techniques honed after many years and much practice. Only he doesn't put it out on the street like you'd expect someone to.
He is not horny on main in the way of a weaker man.
He was like no other.
So she takes them back to the Mead Hall where, the action in Beowulf is like you get with the warriors and you hang out in the Mead Hall and you wait for Grendel to attack. And this is kind of the central set of this episode. And she brings them in and it's very like, I love the like old timey like pomp and circumstance of like introducing these warriors who bring tidings from a faraway land and wish to avenge the death of their former comrade, you know.
The vibe is very Beowulf dinner theater. Like they both enjoy eating with their hands out of novelty, and like the interactions with these characters are a little bit stunted.
Yeah. It's like if you had to write a Shakespeare-like play, but you're in high school and you like don't really have that many,
yeah,
reps reading Shakespeare,
right?
Hrothgar, played by the same actor that played Patrick of the unforgettable X-Men in Deep Space Nine.
How about that?
Yeah, really liked seeing him.
Yeah.
We also get to meet Unferth, who is kind of his right-hand man. And Unferth really, like, kneecaps himself from a scariness standpoint right off the bat because he says, like, your friend is a coward and he was killed by Grendel along with our 30 best warriors. And so we're doing the math at home going, okay, so Unferth is definitely, at best, the 31st best warrior they had.
You just played yourself, Unferth.
You put a quarter in your ass. It's not even Peter Principle. He's like, what's left for like right-hand man of the king?
I don't know anything about Beowulf. Is this just Unferth being Unferth?
I don't know. It's been a long time. It's been, yeah, a long time since I've read or seen it. But I like that character. Like, I think that that's like very intentional on the part of the writers that Unferth is like kind of an idiot and doesn't realize how much he is betraying that to all of the other characters every time he speaks.
I think it's interesting that the comm channel isn't open at all times because about this point, Tuvok and Chakotay call up to the bridge where they tell Captain Janeway that we're pretty sure Kim has died.
And the captain's like, shit, like you guys have been gone for hours. Could you report back a little bit more frequently? What is going on in there?
I feel like a moment of unintentional comedy happens when certain things were done physically in the take as the sequence was edited together. Chakotay starts giving Captain Janeway, you know, the update that what they're inside is a Beowulf program. And Captain Janeway hangs her head after hearing that in a, oh that. God, this is one of those episodes of Star Trek kind of, yeah, way.
Why couldn't it have been a horny bouncy castle program? Come on.
And then tells her about Kim's possible death. To, yeah, which she reacts, you know, appropriately there too, but not nearly as physically as the take she gives to learning that it's Beowulf. And I just thought that was real fun.
Yeah. Followed pretty close after that, Chakotay and Tuvok have a little conversation about like what demons and scary characters in human literature mean. And like, you know, Chakotay is talking about how they represent like darker emotions and they're a way to like explore those things. And Tuvok goes like, well, that's why we don't have any of those kinds of characters in Vulcan literature. And Chakotay just savagely dunks on Vulcan literature.
That might account for its popularity.
Well, the crowd lets you know what they think of it.
Brutal. But Tuvok does not get a chance to rebut this because they get paid a visit by said demon. The barn doors on the Mead Hall start like rattling and like light comes pouring in from the cracks and, you know, the doors burst open, and we cut back up to the bridge, and we've lost contact with Chakotay and Tuvok.
The hypothesizing around this moment is that they've been turned into photonic energy. And this is a phrase that we're familiar with based on that opening scene. And when you are converted into a being of pure energy, it's also known as the endless climax. And we can be sure wherever these three crew people are, they're having a hell of a time.
Yeah, it rules in whatever nexus they've found themselves in.
And, yeah.
So they need to send someone in. One man, one loose cannon who doesn't play by the rules but gets results. That man is Doc Holliday.
Me?
They really needed an exocomp for this mission, huh?
They really did, yeah.
Something that's never climaxed before.
Yeah, they go down to Six Bay and kind of pitch the doctor on this, and it's kind of a head trip for him. He's never even considered the possibility, it seems like.
They play a lot in the margins of, you know, Doc Holliday potentially being scared about the mission to come. Did you ever get the whiff that there was an option for him? Like, could he have said no?
It wasn't great that the episode, like, failed to explore that at all. Like, how much agency are they imagining this character to have? Because I think Cass is, at this point, treats him as, like, a full entity with all of the rights and responsibilities of a citizen of the Federation.
Yeah.
And I know that, like, the captain has moved quite a bit toward that position over the course of this first season, but I don't feel, like, super confident that she's 100% of the way there.
I was shocked that that was a conflict cul-de-sac instead of a conflict road, because, like, that's where the rubber meets the road on whether or not Doc Holliday has any sort of personhood. And they just totally ignore the idea of choice here in a way that I thought really could have imbued this moment and the rest of the episode with some real hardcore pathos here. Like, what if he didn't want to do it? What if he felt obligated somehow?
Yeah.
And it would have made Kes more interesting too, because if Kes is riding on a different side than Captain Janeway, then there's conflict there.
If I was editing the script of this episode, I would have resolved all of the "where is Harry" stuff in two lines of dialogue, with the captain asking the computer where he was when he left, and the computer spitting back the holodeck. And then we could have gotten right into that. And that might have given us more time in this scene for that. The one thing I really love about this scene is the doctor kind of reflecting on what is making him nervous about this situation, and the idea that his world is about to get so much bigger. It's like, not something he'd ever considered being able to do, going to a forest or, like, doing an adventure. And it's like, I don't know, the first time you go to another country or something for him. Like, I really liked that part of the scene. Like, there was some real authenticity there that felt relatable, despite the fact that this character's experience is, like, inherently unrelatable.
Yeah, I like that moment, too. I mean, he's only ever existed in this one room.
Right.
Now imagine your world goes from one room to a universe, really.
Yeah. Imagine you've been vaccinated, for example.
Right. Right. So the pitch is for Doc Holliday to get close enough to Grendel to study this energy surge. That's, in simplistic terms, what the mission is. It's not any more or less heroic than that. But he's got to be transported into the program, which is a bit of business that they give to Paris.
Yeah, they've got to kind of rebuild some of the electrical wiring to make that feasible. So the doctor has some time to prepare, and he's told to prepare, like, by basically familiarizing himself with the text of Beowulf. But Kes is also suggesting, like, maybe, like, decide on a name for yourself so that when you go do that, you have a name to give when you, like, encounter other characters.
It would be nice to know what to call you when you die.
Coffee black. Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
So Paris is sort of the Chief O'Brien of this scene. He's the transporter chief who is transporting one hologram from one room to another. And, like, I feel like Paris has... I mean, I feel like they've given him other scenes to do like technical and scientific stuff before, but that seemed like a full element of his character in this episode in a way that it has been kind of a light element in previous episodes. He got a ton of technobabble and like knowing things about how physics works and stuff.
A hologram can't be converted into energy. It already is energy.
That, like, I don't associate with, like, fighter jock, which is kind of the other side of his character.
Right. He was introduced as the pilot, basically, but he is really, like, a polymath, right?
Like, yeah, he's super capable in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and you feel safe when he's transporting you, which is a quality that we haven't really gotten a bunch of in Star Trek Voyager.
Am I making any sense here?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The doctor shows up in the program, and I really liked the extent to which it just felt like I'm starting a new playthrough of Skyrim. Like, it always starts the same way, you know?
Yeah, you wake up in the back of that cart.
Hey, you, finally awake.
Freya throws a spear at you. And his interaction with her kind of takes the conversation into some different places, but it's really fun. I was thinking about how much the characters in Beowulf felt like they were written a lot like Klingons, like they're kind of warriors and they have, like, they think of themselves as warriors and they think about their honor and their prowess in battle. And Freya's really excited to learn that, like, her, like, the fame of her deeds has reached foreign lands. And I sometimes think about Klingons as being kind of dumber than other Star Trek characters.
Right.
But this really made me realize that Klingons are no dumber than other Star Trek characters. These are the dumb characters.
Schweitzer, a hero's name.
Yeah, I mean, for as fraught as the situation is for Freya and company, she still wants to make the time to do psychedelics. In the scene where she like spots them growing on an overturned log,
yeah,
and she's like, I can't wait to trip balls with you, Doc. Let's do this. and the doctor waves a tricorder over them, and he's like,
I do not have time for an ayahuasca experience. We've got a kind of an emergency afoot.
Yeah, it seems pretty dangerous. But they gather all this material and they take it to the king.
Yeah.
What is that place? Is it a castle?
I think it's a mead hall.
It's a meadery?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they make the mead here, but they definitely drink the mead here. And this is a very fun scene for the doctor. It seems like maybe the first time he's ever eaten anything.
Yeah, and he's got the novelty elk leg that you get at Disneyland. It's big, big fun. And I love all of the takes that Robert Picardo has here. We're doing a lot of shot reverse shot, and it seems like every time we return to him, he's had way more elk leg than you think he's had. Like, there's an elk leg passage of time thing going on that is big fun.
And when he does take bites of it, he takes really big bites, and they like, at a certain point, have to like go like, all right, knock it off to taking the giant bites of the elk leg.
Right. You want to keep that elk leg continuity if you can.
Yeah. Unferth, again, super threatened by the doctor, and they have to establish some dominance. And this takes the form of a sword fight between who the man we're now calling Dr. Schweitzer and Unferth. And what we've learned is that the doctor can turn off and on his magnetic containment, so he can be a pass-through hologram or a solid hologram at will. And he whips this trick out, and it really wows the crowd.
Defend yourself!
It's orange soda in my mouth!
That's what you want right there after doing a magic trick.
Mm-hmm. Very fun to hear a bunch of primitive Danes chanting Schweitzer, the name of a French doctor / theologian, I think.
There's a very like Army of Darkness emotional vibe to this scene and the one that follows, though, right? Because he does this great feat of strength in front of everyone, and then Freya's basement is like totally flooded.
Right.
The very easy visual metaphor of like her stoking a fire that is as she has this conversation and like bonds with the doctor afterwards. And they have a lot in common because like she's afraid of this growing sense of loneliness that she's felt as, you know, 30 people and more have died by Grendel. And she's taking a look around, and not a lot of people are left at this point. And that fills her with a kind of fear that the Doc can actually appreciate, because I think that's like the main thing about the Doctor is his sense of loneliness in the world.
And, you know, one thing leads to another, right? Like, their connection builds to a point where they are actually smooching in this scene. I did not expect the Doctor to get his first kiss before the Captain got her first kiss.
That's a great call. I think we are to infer that he does not bang in this scene.
Before combat, it is most important to stay warm.
First you want to kill me, now you want to kiss me. Blow.
The question remains, though, could he bang? Does he have the tools?
Oh, is he programmed in multiple techniques? Is he fully functional?
Ben, if he has the entirety of medical texts available to him, yeah, he probably knows where everything is.
I mean, he's got a tongue, so he can do a lot, you know? He's got fingers.
He's seen it all.
Yeah, he knows his way around down there.
It's interesting how much sexuality is injected into the Freya character just by virtue of the way she pronounces things. Like, I had a very strong sense memory from her relating to the character of Simone from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Like, there's a roundness to her pronunciation that seems like exotic,
right?
In that way, and it really, like, it made her very attractive in that same way.
Fate often spares a doomed warrior.
Before you go, will you come and watch the sunrise with me?
I know what you mean, that the Sunset Boulevard, like fancy pronunciation of things is really alluring in some way.
But not ham and cheese at all in any way. That's like it's a special quality that few actors can bring to it. It was just very noticeable to me.
Yeah, and it's not like breathy horniness.
No.
It seems more sophisticated than that for some reason.
Right.
So she leaves, and in comes Grendel, which looks just like the glowing entities that they beamed into the petri dishes in the first scene. And the Doctor is scanning it, and it kind of like extends these light tendrils out to him, and one grabs onto his arm, and he kind of panics.
Emergency! Get me out of here!
And they beam him back to Six Bay, and he materializes in Six Bay with one of his arms like lopped off just below the shoulder.
And it is just arterial spray everywhere.
Like, right.
It is a totally disturbing amount of bodily fluids coming out of this stump.
Sick Bay report.
I think you better come take a look at this.
Because you have to keep in mind, he's a hologram, so that there's no, like, theoretical limit to how much can pour out of him. And it's like, I mean, if you think of his body as being like a TARDIS, like, it is full of so much more blood than you could possibly imagine.
The pressure of it really surprised me.
Yeah.
Like, it takes the bark off of a tree. Like, that's how much pressure's behind
this. Yeah, like, and when you're running a video game and there are, like, a lot of characters on screen, you sometimes start to get, like, lower frame rates, you know? And that does not happen in the holodeck. Like, when he appears in the holodeck and starts spraying that blood everywhere, it's just coating every wall, every surface. There's droplets of blood flying everywhere.
It gets in Paris's mouth.
And it doesn't slow down at all. It just goes and goes.
And they take this all the way to the commercial break.
When we come back, they've reattached the arm. Ensign Hazmat is mopping blood up in the background of Six Bay.
My name's Gene, actually.
I've already forgotten that.
They've got some really great data out of this expedition, because the Doctor was there scanning this entity when it made contact with him. So BLT is able to, like, get a lot more data out of these scans than she was any previous scans. And she's like, this is great because I can, like, go run experiments on the other two ones we have in engineering in a dangerous proximity to the warp core and see if I can't figure out, like, how we can, like, flush the photonic energy out of the holodeck and maybe rematerialize our crew members. Because that's, like, what they're talking about is, like, there is maybe some evidence that there's, like, synaptic patterns in this stuff. So they're like, oh, like the molecular patterns of our crew may be preserved in there somehow. Mm-hmm. And if we could somehow find that and rematerialize them in the way that you would rematerialize something on the transporter pad, like, we may be able to save them yet.
There's coffee in that synaptic pattern.
And it really reminded me of that episode Emanations where Harry goes missing, like, and how little hope there seemed to be of them rescuing Harry in that episode. And we talked about how weird it was that they weren't, like, grappling with the fact that they may never see him again in that. Like, this, they, like, the mile markers of, like, we think we can get these guys back are in there as early and often as you need them to not have that same problem.
I don't know what it is that's broken in me. But that episode trained me for this episode in almost the opposite way, in that every time I heard a mention of, like, a synaptic pattern, I was thinking, well, yeah, obviously this energy is alive. I wasn't considering the idea that the crew people were trapped inside. I was just thinking of this energy as a sentient thing. And this is a suspicion that is confirmed when we take it over to engineering, and one of the energy beings breaks out of its container and slimers its way through a wall.
There have been so many episodes already in Voyager that are like, this thing that we thought was just energy is in fact alive. And there have also been so many episodes of, where did Harry go?
Right. It's really a Harry of the week kind of show at this point. Right.
Mother's Day is coming up. And one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use. And I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVS at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Get that
platinum.
Get that
gold enlargement.
I've got to get that
platinum.
What now? Are you planning a heist?
gold.
But when it slimers its way through the wall, it goes outside the ship and into this sphere in space that it reminded me of the ship that Clint Howard was in that episode of TOS. Mm. You'd only catch a brief glimpse of it, but it really reminded me of that.
It looks cool.
And so they start to put it together. Like, this is a ship in some way that we don't fully understand. The photonic energy things are beings. Our crew members have been converted to energy, and they're over there on that ship. And we have done the classic Starfleet's lament of thinking we were just scooping up some samples, but in fact hurting people and destroying a civilization. And so we need to, like, make amends. We need to offer them some kind of gesture of peace and understanding, and see if we can get our dudes back.
Good for Janeway resisting her first instinct to drive her ship into this thing.
We need to go inside the right. capsule.
So the Doctor and Captain Janeway agree that a kind of prisoner exchange might be in order here. Mm-hmm. If what they've got is this last sample that hasn't busted out of engineering, and if what they've got are the three crew people, maybe we can meet in the demilitarized zone between us on the holodeck and maybe do an exchange. So that's the plan.
They turn the Doctor into Oliver Schweitzer, and it's hostages for hostages.
The way it should be.
Yeah, that's a good kind of exchange. I have no complaints.
That's what they say. The best kind of negotiation is when both parties are exchanging hostages. That's the saying, right?
I'd like to finish what I started, Captain. I can do this.
So they give the Doc the other photonic entity in a canister and send him into the holodeck, and he starts in the same place. So this is back in the forest, the part of the game where you meet Freya, and she recognizes him. She's really excited to see him.
They meet like old friends.
Yeah. She's like, we didn't get down on that first date. And that's only made me more excited for this date.
That's exactly what I was getting at. Was like, this scene is what confirms that they didn't fuck in the previous scene. Because if they had, it would have been way more awkward.
That would be difficult to explain.
Speaking of awkward, though, Unferth shows up. He's very jealous.
Yeah, Unferth is a real shit talker. And he doesn't take kindly to the Doctor's advances.
He also thinks that the Doctor is like a coward. He doesn't trust the fact that the Doctor survived his encounter with Grendel. Mm-hmm. And so he wants to prove that the Doctor's a coward. So he starts swinging his sword. And the Doctor is not allowed to, like, de-solid himself this time, because he's got to carry this canister. And I guess if he isn't solid, he could drop the canister right through his hands.
Yeah, so this fight has real stakes. Unfortunately, the stakes involve Freya's death.
Yeah. Unferth stabs her. He's stabbing at the Doctor, and she like jumps in front of the bullet that is a dagger. And she's lying on the ground, shuffling loose this mortal coil as Unferth grabs the canister and runs off. And the Doc is like not even worried about the canister at this point. He is focused on Freya. And she's like dying the death of a warrior, you know? Like,
go finish the work. Leave me. Leave me to bleed out here.
Before you go, I just have one question. What are you working with down there? I mean, is it smooth like a doll, or is there junk?
She coughs that last line out, and he raises his head to heaven and screams out to let Stovokor know a warrior is coming.
Yeah, this really lights a fire in the Doctor's ass. He barges back into the Mead Castle and demands the talisman from the king.
Yeah. He is in not fucking around mode in a way that I was really excited by.
He can't kill someone's special person. Really makes them upset.
He really gets into the character of the moment, too. Like, he gets that torch, and he's like, it's all intimidation factor, right? Like, he doesn't actually have to beat Unferth in single combat. He just, like, approaches him with sword and torch, and Unferth completely shits himself. And, you know, like, it's basically calling Unferth's bluff.
I was confused by this scene at first, and I had to replay it a few times, because that's all it is. It's the warfare of attitude. The threat is somewhat implied in that he's using two melee weapons and two hands, and, you know, who knows what could happen.
Yeah.
But, like, it's really in the way that the Doctor carries himself more than anything.
Unferth fucked around and found out. And yeah. What he found out is that he's not going to get killed today, because the Doctor is programmed to do no hollow harm.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just takes his talisman back from Hrothgar and turns to the door and basically challenges Grendel to come in and meet him. And the doors fly open, and he opens the canister, and the baby photonic entity goes, like, it's just like a littler version of the big one that is occupying the role of Grendel.
Doesn't change what happens to the Doctor, though. His arm once again taken off just above the elbow. And he just fire hoses everyone in the Mead Castle.
Yeah. You see Hrothgar, like, succumb to the blast of blood in the face. He can't catch a breath.
Have you ever tried to get, like, 50 gallons of blood out of a fur stole?
It's never going to be the same.
No.
And, you know, it's sad because the elk aren't quite as populous in this part of the forest as they were when he built the Mead Hall.
Yeah, the elk are going to stay far, far away from this place.
You may be attracting more wolves than anything.
Yeah. So what's interesting about this exchange is that it happens kind of off camera. Like, we cut back to the bridge of the ship, and then we cut back to the bloody Mead Hall, and our crew people have materialized.
Yeah, like, the Doctor was, like, pitching the entity on, like, hey, could we get our people back now, too? We didn't mean anything by it. We knew not what we did. And then it's, like, on the bridge, we get him radioing up, like, hey, great news. All of the main cast members that you were worried about at the beginning of the episode are going to be just fine.
The button on the episode is that, you know, while this began as an exciting first contact episode, it does not appear as though there will be further contact. The way that the captain puts it is that this was your classic episode of Star Trek where there's a conflict that we resolve through communication upon arriving at our resolution, which is this scene that I'm in right now.
I'm placing a special commendation in the logs.
And that's it. Like, we're out. And the Doctor got his first away mission.
The suggestion is that this won't be the last holodeck rodeo for the Doctor. Like, that's definitely the tone and the promise of this thing. But he doesn't get to decide that, huh? Like, that we leave him in Six Bay.
Yeah.
But what I wanted was, as soon as Captain Janeway leaves the room, for him to, like, frizzle out and go back to the holodeck.
I was a little bit hoping for Paris to be like, well, I'm off and heading down and firing up the Marseille pool bar and, you know, saying, like, hey, Doc, like, you wanna come shoot a couple of racks with me or something? And like, showing the holodeck as being also a place for fun for the Doctor.
Yeah, I wonder how much we're going to get the personality chickens coming home to roost as the Doctor becomes more and more integrated with the crew. Like, he's treated a lot of people like shit up until now. Like, I wonder how likely a scenario like that would be for Tom Paris to see the Lonely Doctor and be like, well, this guy's been a fucking dick to me for 10 episodes. Like, why would I want to go shoot pool with him?
I could see Paris as being the kill him with kindness type of person.
Yeah.
But it ends on a much more melancholy note of the Doctor talking about how he's not going to keep the name Schweitzer, because when Freya died, it was the last, you know, she's the last person to call him that, and he doesn't want to continue with that because it'll be too painful a memory.
I wonder how, I mean, this is something you'll just never know, but when you come up with a famous doctor name for your TV show doctor, like, how close could you possibly come to accidentally naming him Cosby or whatever? And like having, and having like retroactive awful thoughts about the doctor name that you choose because something comes out about that historical doctor
right.
that you didn't know at the time. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Like if he, I mean, and especially now, like if he picked somebody that like wasn't considered a, you know, like they're like something bad about them wasn't widely known then, but is now
like he calls himself Dr. Oz. Like Dr. Oz wasn't on TV. They just thought it was a fun name. But then like coincidence makes it so that he's super shitty. The name I've selected is Dr. Drew, a totally generic name that will not be controversial ever.
Dr. Phil. Does that appeal to anyone?
I think these are great ideas, guys. I think this is a talented writer's room. No bad ideas here. I like our choices. I think there's no way we can lose.
Yeah. Kes, I've arrived at my decision. Dr. Laura. Oh.
I think we're in agreement about how much we like those names, Ben. But did you like the episode?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullying. I don't like threats. And I don't like you.
I did like the episode. I think that this was a really fun holodeck adventure. It's like, it's got the same problem that a lot of Star Trek holodeck adventures have, which is that they just don't have the budget to really nail the period that they are depicting the way that you wish they would. Like, it is not a Game of Thrones level fit and finish on the sword and, you know,
right.
sword and cloak costume design. But if you can get past that, I think it's a really fun story, and I like that they are using it for like a very like unique to Voyager kind of plotline. Like this couldn't have been a TNG plotline or a DS9 plotline. It only works in the context of this show.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a really fun way to kind of develop the Doctor character and get under his skin a little bit more.
Yeah, I really agree. I think as a vehicle for the Doctor and their growth, I think I feel like they did a really great job with that development, and I was very satisfied with it. It should be noted, Ben, that Marjorie Monaghan, the actor who plays Freya, was in a lot of episodes of Babylon 5. This is why we didn't recognize her, because we don't watch that show and won't.
What we will watch is the Priority One inbox for The Greatest Generation, and we watch it fill up every week. Do you want to go see what's in there?
It never disappoints, like an episode of Babylon 5. Likely would.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a promotional nature. The message goes like this. He who is my husband encouraged me to buy this Jumbotron. I'm a freelance writer looking for work. I can write anything you'd like, within reason. TV and movie reviews, SEO-focused articles, erotic holo novels, Klingon operas. Basically, I'm like an exocomp for writing, but slightly less self-aware. Email me at edn.jones42@gmail.com. And let's remember the 60-second rule of acquisition. The riskier the road, the greater the profit. Live long and prosper. We love you, Ben and Adam. So there's that email address, edn.jones42@gmail.com. And there's also a website where you can see their work at sinisterblog.com.
Wow. I love this. Promotional Jumbotron. You know, cultivating new business for a freelance writer, and also helping out your favorite Star Trek podcast. That rules.
Yeah, I like this a lot. This is a good kind of commercial message here.
Yeah, love it. Thanks for getting it, and I hope that leads to some writing gigs.
Follow up with us.
I really hope it pays off. You know.
Yeah.
The next Priority One message we have here is of a personal nature. It's from Becky, and it's to Andrew. It goes like this. I wasn't able to get this during the DS9 run, but maybe I can time it for your birthday. This is me making good on the bet that I won in June 2018. I love you a real lot, and thanks for introducing me to a whole new level of nerd. We made it through 2020 together, and you are still my favorite and only pandemic buddy. Happy birthday, Andrew. We are months late on that birthday message for Andrew, but happy birthday nonetheless.
Yeah, a lot of pandemic buddies. Not as fortunate at the end of this as Becky and Andrew, making it through. Good job by them.
Good job by them.
Ben, our final priority one message is from Terry, and it is to Lizzie. The message goes like this. Happy birthday, Lizzie. Also, congratulations on having finished both your class and DS9. Love, Terry.
Man, that's great. Lizzie is a real class act, I would say.
Hopefully both Lizzie and Terry have stuck around for the Voyager version of this show. I mean, The Greatest Generation is something that you and I will never finish.
Right.
We're confined to this show forever.
We're chained to it like a radiator.
Yeah, hoping that Terry and Lizzie, Becky and Andrew, and EDN Jones 42 are chained to the same radiator as we go forward on the show.
Folks may notice that we've been reading three Priority One messages in shows lately. We really appreciate all of the support, and we stacked up the three per episode for a while because we are pretty much booked solid through the end of the year, and we just wanted to like try and move through some of those P1s in a way that was fair to the people that have bought them, but also got them as close to the dates that they requested as they could. Without, jumping over anybody or whatever. So that's why we've been stacking them and racking them like this. Maybe people will keep buying P1s, and the way to do that is by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. That's something we can hash out with our network, but we really appreciate the support, and we're sorry so many of these are like so many months after the date that you were trying for. Got to think real far out in advance on these, just given how much support we've gotten for the P1 program on the show. We really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, it means a lot to us. Thanks.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
It seems like it would be Harry Kim, but it's amazing how much of this episode exists without him. Like, it's just implied that this is what he's into. and that makes him a little weird.
Yeah.
And then we hear these holodeck characters talk about him. Like, I still want to make him the Shimoda of this episode. He's the reason for this episode's being.
He is my Shimoda for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's always fun to be the what the fuck just happened guy at the end of an episode where everything was about rescuing you.
Right.
But also, like, you're right. Like, the implications of Harry's, like, personal recreation time that this holo program makes is very fun, you know?
It's got to be so deeply embarrassing, though, to suddenly reappear and you're seeing people that weren't supposed to be there and they're your coworkers. That's no good.
Yeah, they're like, I'm not really into this. I was just trying it out.
Yeah. Yeah, do not like if you're Harry Kim.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it.
Well, that was a really fun episode to talk about, Adam, but we've got to decide how we will talk about the next episode of Star Trek : Voyager. For that, we use the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Caretaker, which is at gach.biz/game. And while you are firing that up, I'll tell you about Season 1, Episode 12, Cathexis. Energy beings from a nebula displace Chakotay's consciousness from his body. Another energy being episode.
I hope that this energy being separates Chakotay's personality from his body and then throws it away.
Gives him a better one.
Yeah.
It's just a benevolent energy being that is like, hey, what if he was like really gregarious and fun or something like that?
Not a fan of Chakotay at this point.
I think it's a really like fun inversion of Star Trek to underwrite one of the male characters.
I really wonder if this is character ditch being dug that he will eventually climb out of in a satisfying way. Oh, I really wondered that. I think, I hope it happens like that, because I don't like not liking a character as deeply as I do here. Like, he's sub-Neelix to me.
Wow.
And that's fucked up.
That's fucked up, dude.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Ben, I'm over at the Game of Buttholes game board, and I'm looking at our runabout piece, which is currently on square 94. You can check our progress by going to gach.biz/game. A roll of a 5 would get us to a Mournhammered, Ben. And sure, a point of order here I want to check with you is that, is it an exact roll situation? If I roll a 6, do we go back to 1? What happens?
I don't remember how the functionality of the game board works.
I guess we're about to find out.
Yeah, I guess go ahead and fuck around.
All right, I've got the die in my hand. I'm giving it a roll. A 5 is what I wanted, and a 5 is what I got, Ben.
Oh my God, like Babe Ruth, you called your shot.
Yeah, this is hitting my number in craps, and it pays big time, because the next episode will be a Mournhammered episode. It will be a Power Hour episode.
God damn, I haven't had a 6-pack of beer in my fridge in a long time. I'm gonna have to go supply myself.
I think I want to do mine with seltzer. I don't really like drinking a lot of beer anymore, and we don't really have it in the house. I think I might do a hard seltzer style. That's
how
been
are
a
you
new
gonna
favorite
mix
of mine.
Individual shots of hard. Oh, you're gonna like buy. You're gonna buy like claws.
Well, either that or like the last hard seltzer I got from that brewery in Santa Barbara was fucking great. Like that's shit I want.
I never see this anywhere, but I discovered that a store in my neighborhood sells 24 packs of Olympia beer, which...
Wow, holy.
Yeah, that's a beer I really like, and it's usually something you only see in the Seattle region, in my experience anyways.
You know what, dude? Let's meet up, because I kind of want to do the same. I want some of that Olympia.
Yeah, I mean, we're vaxxed enough to make that happen.
Yeah, we're vaxxed enough to hand a half rack of beer to each other when the opportunity arises. So yeah. Let's do it.
All right. Well, I'll go procure that, and we'll find a way to make the handoff happen
right.
Soon. Well, that will be next week on the show, which actually, come to think of it, is the beginning of the Max Fun Drive. Which is the one time a year where we really push new and upgrading support of the show. I think are we going for 2,000 new and upgrading again this year? We should have a meeting about that.
That's the right number for us.
Yeah, that would be really great. So if you're enjoying the show and you haven't supported yet, or if you are considering upgrading, the Max Fun Drive is the best time of year to do it, because you get even better inducement gifts than normal, and we'll be putting a couple of very fun bonus episodes in the donor bonus feed coming up soon. It's going to be a ton of fun, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think we're going to have a great drive this year.
Back to the standard 2 weeks, which is something that we're all thankful for. Looking forward to a tight and tidy 2-week Max Fun Drive this year to make sure that The Greatest Generation continues apace.
Yeah. So, and I think we'll probably be doing lots of fun stuff on Twitch. And, you know, of course, we reached our goal in the last Max Fun Drive to destroy the Falcon. We have some Lego kits that have now been built, and I think... I'm not promising this yet, but I think we may try to do that live on the internet when we destroy the Falcon. And the Falcon this year takes the form of the Star Destroyer model, the one that's like 5 feet long. Mm-hmm. And we're going to drop that on the Roman Colosseum model, which is the highest number of pieces ever in a Lego kit. And Adam is building that. I built the Star Destroyer, and we're going to let them destroy each other.
Now, we haven't agreed on what is being dropped onto what. I personally believe that the Colosseum should be dropped.
Oh, interesting.
On the Star Destroyer.
I can see the case for that, because I bet the Colosseum is much denser than the Star Destroyer.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be like dropping a rock in a pond.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. And I love the idea of doing it on Twitch, a place that has had exactly zero technical issues for us along the way.
Yeah, we may have to bring in a pro to help us with that. But so keep your eyes locked on the @GreatestTrek social media accounts for news about that. And obviously follow and subscribe to the Greatest Trek Twitch account if you haven't already. We really appreciate that. Those accounts are run by the card daddy, Bill Tilly, who's put on the payroll. He does a really great job with the social media stuff for this show. We also got to thank Adam Ragusea, who makes the original music for the program, of course, based on the Picard song by Dark Materia that you hear under my voice right now.
If you haven't lately, go give Greatest Discovery a listen. We're doing a lot of fun things in the off seasons of the new Star Trek series over there. We've got a number of fun interviews already in the can, and some comic books chat. We'll go deep diving into TOS episodes on occasion as well. It is the creative sandbox for the hosts of The Greatest Generation, and it's a lot of fun, so give it a listen.
Give it a listen. There's tons of new Trek news coming out every week, and we're talking about it over on The Greatest Discovery.
Right.
Give us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. If you ask a question in your review, we might answer it on an upcoming episode of the show. Also, if you're looking for other friends of DeSoto to connect with, there are some really terrific groups on Facebook and Reddit and the DrunkShimoda.com Discord group. And everywhere you go that there are friends of DeSoto are fun places to go. Friends of DeSoto totally fucking it. So.
They do.
And with that, we will be back at you next episode with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager, an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager, where we test if we can become beings of pure energy by drinking enough beer.
Can't wait to find out.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.